So I'm gonna talk this evening about something's called the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. And just letting it go at that might, isn't the type of topic that my people would be running, to the doors to get in. I really want to hear about that. So, thankfully there's more to it than that. So with the greed, hatred, and delusion, it's not just that, but what we're doing is becoming aware of greed, hatred, and delusion. Which are basically barriers that arise that kind of interfere and run interference with our opportunity to see clearly. And what we're talking about it is that it's not just something that is, but it's something that through our mindfulness practice, we can transform into a way of seeing more clearly. So I'm going to start here with a bit of a quote. This is from the teaching of the Buddha and describing these three poisons or the greed, hatred, and delusion, sometimes called the defilements, different names for them. And the Buddha says, luminous bhikkhus is the mind, but it is defiled, obscured by visiting defilements. The uninstructed worldlings, might be us, do not understand this is really how it is. Therefore, I say that for the uninstructed worldlings, there is no development of the mind. Continues on. Luminous bhikkhus is the mind, and it is freed from visiting defilements. The instructed noble disciple understands this as it really is. Therefore, I say that for the instructed noble disciple, there is development of the mind. So I think there's a couple of things is being said here. One is that the mind is luminous. That's the natural way. That's the essence of the mind. I think we might have an idea that our minds are not good enough. Our minds are creating all kinds of problems. And it's the way our minds are. It's kind of an identity that we can have around our minds. But what he's offering in this simple teaching, these two paragraphs, is that the mind's nature is luminosity, clarity. And the things like greed, hatred, and delusion, the defilements, the distortions, are just that. They're an overlay. They're visitors. They're passing. They're not of essence of the mind. And so he offers a practice in regard to relating to the defilements. And I'll get into that in a bit. First, I'm going to talk about what they are. What are these defilements? What are these poisons? What are they? What is greed, hatred, and delusion? First of all, they're pretty strong words: greed, hatred, and delusion. And basically, what they're doing, it captures a whole range of things. So, in terms of greed means anything from merely wanting some ice cream, grasping after ice cream, to trying to own and control and rule the world. And both the subtle, tiny, small types of wanting, greed, to the full-blown. Likewise, with the aversive part, the aversion, the hate. I mean, that's again a pretty strong word, but so it's a word that kind of captures the full range, from just being annoyed by somebody in line at traffic, to really, hate to the degree that you see in the cruelties of war, and then delusion. Again, can go from just mildly confused to the full-blown, where we actually believe that through greed and hatred, we can attain happiness. So greed, desire, grasping, this is wanting to get stuff, wanting to get relationships, get results, get particular conditions. Greed offers a promise. We think that we can grasp after things if we get stuff. We're going to end up being happy. There are three kinds that are typically talked about in terms of this wanting mind. One is the sensory pleasures, you know, the stuff. Another is wanting for self. I want to look good. I want to be powerful. I want these characteristics. I want people to see me that way. And the other is annihilation, almost like an aversion to self. Not wanting to be seen, you know, a hiding from, a dislike for. This is, I guess, the aversion part of the three types of what's called tana. So greed and desire are seen as a promise to happiness, but they're like tunnel vision. It narrows our view to only see the wanted object. It excludes all else. It's an obsession. And so it's often a movement away from some sort of unpleasant experience, like boredom, something like that, in hope of finding a better situation. And we do it by fantasies and daydreams. We do it by checking out our device, by eating, by distracting ourselves, by finding adventure upon adventure. Hatred and aversion, the second of the poisons, it involves a full range of ways we create a separation between ourselves and a situation. Separate ourselves from a person, another being. Want to separate ourselves from a feeling, an unpleasant feeling. And this can range from just a mild annoyance to extreme hatred. It includes anger, impatience, boredom, fear, all a way of wanting to get rid of, you know, aversion to one's own mind even. Irritation, impatience, fear, boredom, things like that. I don't want this moment, so we turn away, close our eyes and look for a distraction and seek something else that's pleasant. The third one is delusion, confusion, ignorance, an unwise view, not seeing clearly. Believing, one thing is, delusion is believing that we can find happiness by chasing after the pleasant and avoiding the unpleasant. That's the ultimate delusion. Believing that it's all about us, the identifications that we have around us, the identifications we have around our narrative about us. I'm no good. They're no good. They're good. I'm not. I'm good. They're not. All those comparisons of self and others, all those identifying self and others are types of delusion. Delusion clouds. It's a kind of a clouding, narrowing of our view. So we don't even notice. In a conversation, we might not be aware what the other person is really saying because we're kind of lost in our own thoughts. We go into a store, we might not notice the people around us. We're kind of zeroed in our own little world. There is an organization called Facing Homelessness, which Sims is going to be sharing the space down in University Friends Center. And they work with homeless people. And they have a slogan which says, just say hello. And it has to do with, you know, how we don't notice homelessness. We grow, see people without homes in this big group. We don't see individuals. We're deluded into recognizing, a characteristic of society as opposed to seeing people and who they are. Delusion is a distortion. It's kind of like an astigmatism. I once looked out the window and the moon was rising. I wasn't wearing my glasses and I looked at the moon. There's two moons. Is that right? I said, I was trying to figure out, make sense out of that. And it was just a matter of the way I was seeing, the way I was confidently seeing was two images and moons. So these three things interrelate. Greed and hatred arise from delusion. The delusion that getting this and getting rid of that will lead to happiness. The delusion that happiness can be had by pursuit of impermanent conditions that are going to continually disappoint us. The delusion of a separate and independent self in relationship to the rest of nature. But it's in spite of greed, hate, and delusion being the real root of suffering, it also can offer us certain benefits. And that's why it stays alive. It can make us feel alive and excited. We have fun adventures and stories to tell. It's like we go on a trip. We come back from the trip. You ever notice that you get in a group of people, go on a trip, and the stories about the trip are all the best things and all the worst things. Oh my God, you wouldn't believe what happened, and then you go on from there that it was an exciting adventure or just kind of all the things that went wrong. It doesn't, we don't do the things which are, people don't show up in a social situation and say, ah yes, I was sitting on my deck yesterday and it was just pleasant. It's like it's so much of our interaction requires or is searching or looking for a way that we can identify with these strong emotions one way or another. So in spite of the fact that they cause the promise isn't fulfilled, in spite of the fact that the things that we get disappear, relationships end, people die in our lives, we lose our jobs. Things that we had hoped were going to offer permanent satisfaction do not, and they disappear. So the Buddha offered an alternative to this. And that was the Eightfold Path, Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. The greed, hatred, and delusion is a contraction. It's a closing down. Our universe gets reduced to a bowl of ice cream or an annoying driver in front of us. And this is can be held up. And the alternative to that is more of a wider view. And one thing I like. These days, I don't know, you guys are probably following the Webb telescope and how that, and there was a, they looked at a point in space that was black as far as the Hubble telescope was. And the Webb telescope looked at that and it was hundreds, millions of galaxies, trillions of stars in a small dot. And I find that helpful. When we close down, all we see in an argument is that person, my view. And by widening that view, we can take it in. We can take in a lot more. Carl Sagan makes reference to views from outer space. Say, if we really understood the Earth is just this little dot in space, we wouldn't have these disagreements, it wouldn't make sense for us to have divisiveness in this small space and time that we are sharing. So, it's a way to practice with this. And practice begins with the Four Noble Truths, an Eightfold Path. So rather than closing down and going from one pleasant experience to another, pushing away one unpleasant to the other, it begins with a view, a wise view, wise intention. It begins by seeing our interrelationship, by seeing a sense of things being permanent, sees how our suffering arises from trying to have happiness arise from impermanent situations. And it also begins with an intention in that regard, an intention to live our lives rather through greed, hatred, and delusion, to live it through for my welfare and the welfare of others and leading to peace. And it also involves sila. It involves ethical behavior. So that gets to be how we frame our worlds rather than wanting and avoiding. And yet, greed and hatred are natural occurrences. They come together as a result of conditions. And so it's not like we're going to just say, I'm not going to do that anymore. They are going to arise. So with this practice, what we do is recognizing it with mindfulness. So we can see how it arises. This is what greed feels like. This is what anger feels like. And maybe we're confused. And that's one kind of a hard one to recognize. But if we're kind of not knowing, it might occur to us for our mindfulness practice, oh, okay, I'm not quite with it here. I'm not quite connected. And that can be noticed. So, in my practice, there's a couple. I'm not having a lot of time here, so I'm gonna get down to how I practice. And I have a couple of experiences. I had an experience with just doing this when I was writing this talk, when I was trying to prepare for this talk, and it can be a real challenge for me. How do I put this talk together? How do I say something that makes sense, that's appropriate, that's aligned with Buddhist teachings? And it's not the easiest thing for me. And I want this. So I have that wanting mind of wanting to prepare a talk. But I have this mental block. So I noticed when I have that mental block, I'd find, oh, having this wanting, not having my wanting fulfilled by preparing the talk, I would want something else. I'd want to get something to eat. I'd want to take a walk. I would want to check my device. Something to want. I wanted this fulfillment. Running into that obstacle of preparing a talk did not get me there. So in relating to this, I said, oh, that's interesting. There's wanting. There's that wanting mind. So it wasn't like I pushed away the ice cream. It wasn't like I pushed away the object of the wanting. But rather than pushing away the object, I start relating to the wanting itself. You see, this is what wanting feels like. Can I relax around this? Can I notice the narrative? The narrative is a big one. You know, my narrative is I can't do this talk. I can't do this. I want to do something else. I have some sort of narrative. So the narrative needs to be let go of. And then I could come around and relax more around trying to prepare this talk. I've done that in other experiences. I often think about my early times when I started practicing a few years ago. And a couple of benefits I had from this practice was one around quitting smoking and another around relating to depression. And both of those have been the benefits of this practice. In relating to smoking, it was an addiction. It was how do I not? I have an identity around smoking. It's kind of cool to smoke. But it was an addiction I could not smoke. And so relating to the quitting of smoking was relating to the narrative, I can't do this. And say, okay, never mind that narrative. And then allowing that feeling of wanting and being with that feeling of wanting and allowing it to arise, allowing it to get stronger, allowing it to pass. I wasn't pushing away the cigarettes. I was allowing for the sense of wanting to arise and pass of its own accord. Likewise, I guess surprisingly, there's a real similarity in terms of how I relate to depression. I get pretty dark. It could go on for days, a long time. And people who have suffered from depression or even just sadness and the blues. I mean, there's a narrative. Oh, this is the way I am. This is my normal self. This is who I am. I hate this. So there's a hating of how I am. There's a hating of wanting myself. There is a wanting of annihilation of self. There's all this pushing away. And mindfulness practice was very helpful. For one, it recognized that narrative. It recognized the narrative of all the ways I judged myself, of all the ways I was saying that this is the way it is, this is who I am. And it was able to put that aside. It would say, that's not believable. And I was able to relate to just the feeling of, what is this right now? What am I experiencing aside from that narrative? And I'd find, I can be with this. General, my conditions were all right. I had food, shelter, and clothing. And it would be something I could relate to. And so, time I got better and better at recognizing that spiraling of depression and not it happening in shorter periods of time and with less intensity. So these days too, I can still get into a funk. I just had one the other day, and it can feel pretty strong. But it was really worthwhile seeing the degree to which the narrative itself keeps it alive. The way I talk about it, the way this is the way it is, the way I was. So it's worth stopping. In terms of mindfulness practice, there's a pause. There's an intentionality. Oh, what's going on here? There's a curiosity. What is this? What's this thing? What's this kind of emotional business I'm getting caught up in? Oh, okay. All right. I see the narrative. Oh, yeah, I know something about narratives now. Not helpful. Joseph Goldstein would even say there's hardly a thought worth thinking. The narrative could be let go of. And just recognize. What is my experience without that narrative? Yeah, like I say, just the other day I got in a bit of funk, and it was amazing. I was amazing the degree to which narrative was creating that energy around the funk. So it's not a magic bullet. It's not just, okay, you do this. It's not, I don't want to be too glib here. The type of things that people experience, the trauma, the depressions, their habits around depression, not something we just do. Okay, I'm going to be mindful, I'm going to let go. But it is something that we can have a different relationship to it. We can bring a curiosity to our difficulties in life. We don't have to have. It's not necessary. Our mind is luminous. Greed, hatred, and delusion are a visitor, are an overlay. They can be recognized. They can be seen for what they are. We can get clarity around it. We can let go of our identity around it. We can be liberated from greed, hatred, and delusion. We can see clearly. We can move from suffering to not suffering. So I think I'll let it go at that. Thank you for your attention. Do we just sit a second? So there's a poem that many of you have heard by Rumi, The Guest House. I heard that in beginning classes, I've often heard it there. It invites visitors, these visitors of greed, hatred, and delusion, all these defilements, just visitors. You can see them as such. Invite them in. Have a seat. We don't have to entertain them. We don't have to give them a big meal. We don't have to keep them there forever. We can, okay. We can allow their comings and goings. We can get to know them and allow them to leave on their own. Thank you.